The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must eat America.
Okay, welcome back to the top of the second hour of National Intel Report, live on Republic Broadcasting Network, Liberty Lighthouse on Mojo 50 Radio, and Patriot Nation Radio Network. Anywhere else you're hearing or watching the show, we've got T.C. Morrison with us tonight, author of a series of books, Torts Are Us. The newest one coming out in about 2 weeks, Send in the Tort Lawyers. Now, before we get back to talking with TC, we got a phone call. Sarah in Oregon on line one. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
In the first bit of the show, we were talking about being stuff, doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But do stuff. But we need to do all those things responsibly without calling for violence in a Hitler-esque delivery, because it gives the left ammunition for us to call racist, homophobic, sexist, and violent. But
so no Sieg Heils.
No Sieg Heils, no Stu Peters type ranting and raving.
Oh, yeah, Stu really went off recently. Man, he's going to get himself in some serious trouble if he keeps that up.
Yes, that is why he's ruined Mojo. He's ruined Mojo. He's screwed everyone over, including yourself and Dominic Izzo and all those people. But this is why I set up tonight's space for the responsibility of free speech and the age of extremism. It's on after your show. Bye, on X.
Bye, Sarah. Sarah is one of my biggest fans, one of the best followers. She constantly sharing out on social media the show and calls in almost every week. Love Sarah for that. Let's see here. So your books are, you know, they're all tort in their name. And anytime I even hear tort, I immediately think of the McDonald's coffee lady. The lady who spilled the hot coffee in her lap and then sued McDonald's and won, I don't know, $5 million or $50 million or whatever it was. Most people's gut reaction to that case is that is tort gone wrong. Like, there's no reason that she should have ever gotten an award, let alone an award that big. Do you know anything about the case other than that?
No, I really don't. I don't have a problem with this lady suing McDonald's if the coffee was really too hot and didn't have a holder on the cup or something. I would only have a problem if she filed a class action and brought in 1,000 other people claiming that their coffee was too hot. That I would have a problem with. Well, tell me what you know about the case. I'm interested.
Well, what I found out was what made the case really interesting. Okay, so typically you want to serve coffee between 170, maybe 190 degrees, like at the absolute most. Like 190 degrees is screaming hot coffee.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's, or I don't remember if it was McDonald's corporate or McDonald's that particular franchise, but they had a historical record of multiple complaints about their coffee being far too hot.
Mm-hmm.
They were aware of the problem, but that their coffee was far too hot. And it was basically company standard to keep the coffee far too hot. So once I learned that, then that to me is gross negligence. And yes, you deserve to be slapped down for that. You deserve punishment level of tort to that.
Yeah. You know, I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. The lady got, you know, second degree burns in her lap when she spilled her coffee, which is terrible. And she should have been, you know, compensated for that. But most people think that the the judgment was far too big. But when you find out that this multi-billion dollar company was knowingly serving coffee hot enough to scald, then that changes to me. It changes. Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree with that.
All right. What do you know about the history of the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution?
I am not a constitutional lawyer. I'm sorry, Peter. I was scanning through the various blogs and articles. I really can't come on and talk about deep constitutional law.
This one's going to be kind of fun to you. So the 13th Amendment that we know today is the slavery is dead, like no more slavery in the United States. And that happened, you know, right after the so-called Civil War, the war between the states, because it really wasn't a civil war, but the war between the states. Prior to the war between the states, there was a 13th Amendment proposed, and some say ratified. There are actually books. There are at least 47 times this other version of the 13th Amendment was printed, and of course, it was in the War of 1812, the White House being burned, all of the records were lost. But there's supposedly there's this other 13th Amendment out there that said that the title of Esquire awarded to an attorney was deemed to be a title of nobility, and therefore attorneys were no longer were not welcome as members of Congress. That
members of what?
Congress. Lawyers could not be elected to Congress.
That's bizarre. They've always been elected to Congress.
Yeah. Well, there was this push at one point when you know, lawyers, I no offense to you personally, but I think lawyers have ruined the government. I think the fact that there's so many lawyers in Congress is how we ended up with 440 federal departments and agencies for the 17 powers listed under Article 1.
Yeah, I partially agree with that. I think the problem is not so much the lawyers in Congress. It's all the administrative agencies that have been just, you know, growing like crazy. And, you know, I once saw the numbers on the Code of Federal Regulations. It's in the millions of pages of federal regulations. To my mind, that's where we got too many lawyers, too many agencies, too many regulations. I have no problem if Congress wants to vote on some crazy proposal like let's abolish gasoline-driven cars. If Congress actually if we want to have a vote on that in Congress, okay, that's one thing. It may be misguided, but at least your elected officials are voting on it. But when administrative agencies start issuing rules, that's where I think you're right, that we've just gone way too far.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Constitution clearly says that only Congress can make laws, but federal regulations are treated as laws. They're given the power of law, and they're even called administrative law.
Right, right. So, I think there you're probably familiar with a law professor wrote a book claiming that the entire administrative system is unconstitutional. It came out about 4 or 5 years ago. I heard him give a lecture on it. I haven't actually read the book.
Yeah. You don't have to be a genius. You read the Constitution itself and you can figure that out. If it just nobody wants to do anything about it. It's the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946 is kind of what opened the doorway for the gazillions of agencies.
Yes.
But the Administrative Procedures Act itself was unconstitutional. So anyway, so we talked about how your newest book is different to the other ones. What are you doing next?
Well, I'm kind of a one-trick pony. I'll probably continue the series. I have a good friend who helps me with all computer-related issues on which I do need help. I can input the book on my computer, but there's a lot of computer stuff I can't do. In any event, he's helped me with all three books. He wants me to do something about AI in the next book, and I'm beginning to look into that. Obviously, that's a huge topic, but there's a lot of funny things going on. For example, not too long ago, an AI bot lawyer was named to the list of the 100 best lawyers in America.
That's funny.
And also more recently, this was just within the last month or two, a judge in New York sanctioned an attorney who had submitted an AI-generated brief, and the brief had got everything wrong. Case that had nothing to do with the issue, and the judge was not a happy camper.
That's funny. That's really funny.
So I think there's probably a lot I can do with AI. I want to keep it humorous, though. I'm not going to write a treatise on whether AI is good or bad for us.
Yeah, like anything else, it's a tool. Social media is a tool. It's we, the people, that have turned it into a cesspool that it is.
Yeah.
And I'm sure social media is much the same way. Anyway, we got a phone call. I don't know if he wants to talk to you or me, but he says he wants to talk about the 13th Amendment and attorney thing. Joe in Oklahoma on line three.
Yes, I don't know which one of you I want to direct this to, because I didn't get in on the very first of your discussion. But one of you that was talking about this seemed to be apologetic that we couldn't know for sure that this 13th Amendment was ever ratified or whatever. But I myself, personally, in 1996, viewed in the Arlington County Courthouse, Arlington, Virginia, the 18 statutes of the Commonwealth of Virginia, along with the United States Constitution and its attending amendments.
Mm-hmm.
And the 13th Amendment in 1817 in the Commonwealth of Virginia spoke of prohibiting those with titles of nobility, i.e. esquires, from holding public office.
Right.
That myself. This isn't hearsay. It wasn't reproduction. It was the actual document. And
like
I seen reproduced documents from a slew of other states and territories. I think it was the last I saw was in the Northwest Territories, and I can't remember the date, but it was well into the 19th century.
Like I said, it was printed at least 47 times. And back then, it was common, because there weren't very many laws, it was common for states to print their law books, and they would put in the front of their law book the U.S. Constitution as the supreme law of the land. And yeah, there are multiple copies of the 13th Amendment that has now disappeared. I would think that it's probably lawyers that made it disappear.
I never understood why they wanted to call lawyers, or lawyers wanted to call themselves esquire. To me, that's kind of needless.
I never understood that either. I always thought it was
I can tell you why.
Because it's a title.
They put themselves above everyone else.
But so does just put JD, Juris Doctorate. It's the same. It means the same thing, and it doesn't sound pretentious.
Well, I don't disagree with that. But thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your call. Greatly appreciate it, Joe. All right, so you're thinking about doing about something with AI, and that would be interesting to me. I use AI to help me a little bit. I generally will use AI when I'll write something out and get the AI to reorganize it or polish it for me sometimes when I've got something I want to say, but I just can't make it sound good. And I'll type it out and I'll say, hey, reword this, and it'll rearrange it and make it sound better.
In a way that you're happy with?
Usually. Sometimes I have to hit the regenerate three or four times until it comes up with one that I like, but it helps.
Okay. Well, as a lawyer who wrote briefs all the time for 45 years, I frankly got tired of people telling me that they could improve upon my brief writing. So I probably would resist going to AI to, quote, polish anything I wrote. Maybe I should, but I'm self-assured enough that I think I probably would resist that.
I get stumped. I have a high school education, and I just started this whole political stuff like 5 years ago. I spent most of my life in restaurants. Now I'm a mailman, and you know, sometimes I need a little help polishing around the edges.
How long were you in the service, Peter?
I only did 2 years on active duty, and then I did 6 years in the reserves.
Ah, okay.
Mike in Kentucky on line three. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, that's kind of a standard thing, but I think they can recall you up to, depending on what your profession is, up to 55 or 60. I can't remember. They changed the policy on that when they were short during the Gulf War.
Yeah.
Or sometime there in the early 2000s. So, yeah, I held in my hand, rebound, two copies published by Kentucky in 1822 of that 13th Amendment back in, I'm going to say, 1994. And I hate to say where it might still be, because stuff tends to disappear sometimes from libraries.
Yeah, that's what I want to understand. What I don't understand is, okay, so, you know, the whole theory is that when the White House burned in the War of 1812, that, you know, the whether or not it was ever ratified was destroyed. And we can look back now, and we can see where Congress asked the president, hey, check and make sure if this got ratified, but we don't have any record of the president getting responses from the states now. But the fact that it was printed, you know, 47 times over 5 years or something like that seems to suggest that it was probably ratified.
Well, and what matters is the archives of the state. The states all thought it was ratified, as far back as I'm aware of, 1822, but supposedly the territory of Montana.
No, well, hear me? We seem to have lost Mike. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, sir. We do. Well, let me, Mike, hold on for just a minute. I'll come right back to you. Mr. Morrison, anything else that you would like to add this evening before I let you go?
No, I would just say that if your listeners are in the mood for a good laugh, I urge them to buy any one of these three books. I think they'll have a lot of fun reading it, and they'll also learn a little bit about class action abuse, which is a real serious problem that needs to be addressed, but probably won't be.
Yeah, well, you know, lawyers involved, so probably not.
Right. Oh, yeah, the lawyers' lobby is huge. That's why it's probably not going to be addressed.
Well, Mr. Morrison, thank you very much for your time. Everybody go out, go to Amazon, search for T.C. Morrison, and buy his newest book, Send in the Tort Lawyers.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Night. Let's go back to Mike in Kentucky. Where were we, Mike?
Well, I was just going to say that the last time it was published, as I understand it, was like 1874 by the territory of Montana, as far as the title of, and it's, you really have to call it the Titles of Nobility Amendment, because there were other proposed 13th Amendments prior to that. So, and none of them came close to being ratified.
Just like all of them.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
There were several before and after. I mean, there have been thousands of amendments proposed. But yeah, the Titles and Nobility version is the one that, well, sure seems to look like it was probably ratified and then just disappeared.
I was going to say, what you mentioned about the War of 1812 burning the White House was kind of irrelevant, because it was proposed as, because of the War of 1812, as I understand it, I think in 1818, something like that. Kentucky ratified it in 1822, and all the other states thought it was ratified, so they published it as ratified, whether they voted on it or not. It's real similar to the 16th Amendment, you know, the law that never was. It was Bill Benson's two-volume set where he went to all the state archives and showed that the 16th Amendment was not properly ratified, and even one state changed the language of it, which you can't do that. You know, I think it was Kansas. So
ratifying is something that doesn't exist. Yeah, it's funny.
The president doesn't even have to sign a law. No. I wasn't aware of that until I looked into the history of the Affordable Care Act with Barack Obama, and you can find the date.
He can wait 10, you know, just not sign it, and 10 days later it becomes law, as if he did.
It depends on whether or not Congress is in session or not. But Barack Obama has just simply stamped approved and put an autograph on there without it having his title or seal. It's kind of weird if you find that page. I mean, Nancy Pelosi has her seal on there. Joe Biden has his signature line with his title, but it just says stamped with ink approved in Barack Obama's signature. It's kind of weird. You would think he'd put his title on there as President of the United States of America, with a big, you know, wax seal.
Yeah. There's definitely a shall we say, questionability about the 13th through 17th Amendments. Like, they all have issues of, hey, was that ratified right or not?
Well, it's the 13th, the second 13th Amendment, 14th and 15th in the post-Civil War era, they all add this paragraph that says Congress shall have the power to enforce this amendment. No other amendments have that. It's almost like they're trying to legitimize Congress, because the Congress after the Civil War doesn't even meet when the Constitution says they're supposed to meet. We've got a substitute Congress or something.
Yeah. There was a lot of shadiness after the Civil War about how Congress was operating. That's for sure.
Well, they didn't have the authority to adjourn, sign a day in the first place, just because seven senators no longer had authority to act. You know, they were recalled by their states. They had no authority to act, so Jefferson Davis gave a farewell speech and left. I mean, there was nothing else he could do. He had no authority. And so the Union was not dissolved. The newspapers were probably at that point controlled by the Rothschilds, I don't know. But the Union actually was not dissolved. It was a big lie. They could continue on with the states that stayed. And they had no authority to adjourn, sign a day, which means without setting a time to reconvene, basically. So that was a flim-flam, you know, and Lincoln ordered them back into session under emergency power, supposedly, that he didn't have either. So it's just
one thing. Well, no, the president can call Congress to emergency session. That is in the Constitution.
It is? Okay. Well, I got that one wrong. But
don't get me wrong, Lincoln used a lot of emergency powers he didn't have. But that wasn't one of them.
Right. Well, I really didn't. I thought there was a problem with that, because the dates that they traditionally meet now is not what's listed in the Constitution.
No. The Constitution says, it has to meet once, and now they meet all year round. So
I've been listening to alternative media for a long time. Back in the 90s. There was somebody that said that if you watch C-SPAN at the right time, you'd see the president of the House, the president of the Senate, which is the vice president, the speaker, or either way, in Congress on both sides, they recognize a messenger from the president of the United States. A guy walks in, says, "Mr. Speaker" or "Mr. President, the emergency continues," and turns around and walks back out.
Right, because
the whole thing's operating under emergency is what they were claiming.
It is. What was I just thinking of? We're under the Declaration of Emergency since the Depression, like the Great Depression. Emergency.
That was never, as far as I know, the banking thing was never fixed.
Nope.
So
never
there's
been
30 some emergencies that we know about. It just makes me wonder how many there are that we don't know about, because we're mushrooms kept in the dark, fed on,
I'd kind of like to see a presidential candidate stand up and said, "On day one, I will sign an executive order ending all emergencies."
No, I don't think that would be wild to see that happen. I think the government would scramble to figure out how to operate after that, because there would be a lot of stuff that would have to be dismantled, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Departments would have to go away. Hey, thanks for your call, Mike, in Kentucky. Misty, feel free to call back. Sorry I missed you. It's break time. Be back in 3 minutes.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new, healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
There, Mike, sounded a little bit like something a hypnotist might be playing. Or no. Anyway, welcome back. I'm Peter Serafine. This is the final segment of tonight's show. And boy, have we been all over the place. Started out trying to suggest things that we can do to help fix our republic from the ground up. Fixing your town, changing your voter registration to one of the third parties just to send a message to the two big parties. Fixing your town by electing constitutionalist people in your town and in your county, right there. People that you can remove from office, because it doesn't take a whole lot to remove a local official. People that are willing to stand up against the tyrannical overreach of the federal monstrosity that we have now. But it's the final segment of the show, and I didn't tell you about Romika Designs in the last segment. Don't forget to visit romikadesigns.com, R-O-M-I-K-A, designs.com, romikadesigns.com, for all of your custom laser-engraved, laser-etched, laser-cut gifts and needs and purposes. Awesome stuff. I have bought a couple of gifts myself for my beautiful wife at romikadesigns.com. Use code Lighthouse when you're there. Save yourself a couple of dollars. I'd greatly appreciate that. And, well, let's see what Reb has to say. Reb, been holding since the last break. And, well, welcome to the show, Reb.
Yeah, U.S. Pentagon first team, Bubba, Scout, Reb in Colorado, Lakewood, Colorado. And we're not going to stop. You asked last week, what does he have in mind? We spelled it out. We're the law. We're not just nobodies. We're prosecution witnesses for the United States America government against the state of Colorado. I told you, we're all under military jurisdiction. And I spent the first hour when you were talking about something else, harassing the United States Pentagon at the National Command Center. So you call the number if you got any sense. You don't want lockdown. You don't want to take an injection. You already said no. We heard you. But you're going to have to back it up by force. And that's what U.S. military does. It's a public law, 109-364, section 1076. The governor of this state was dealing dope against federal law. We're going to shut them down. We're going to bring the IRS. And we're going to take their dope money because it's a federal crime to possess marijuana. You don't have to like it. And you have every right to get in the way. Because we're not going to stop. It's the law. We go round them up. They've been obstructing justice. And we're not the Justice Department. We're the War Department. And it's time for them to be brought in dead or alive. Alive's not looking good. The regional administrator has said, no, don't surrender. That's what they're telling them. So we already know. Just like, you know, we're fed up with Caucasians. We're telling everybody we're a white race. All Caucasians suck. They can't get 20 of them together ever to go into a food store and say, we're not covering our nose and mouth. They're not going to do that. You know, when they lock you down, that's coming.
So, Reb, I'm guessing that you're not going to be taking the new vaccine that the Biden administration announced the other day that he's asking for funding for?
It's murder. So we know Research Triangle Park, Fort Detrick, Maryland, they're not going to get that stuff out of there on our watch. It's not coming this way. It's like telling you, we're bringing this stuff to murder you. No, you're not. It's going to stop. And we're not going to do anything. We're not covering our nose and mouth. But you have to organize. How come the DART people can organize? They don't even know each other. And they can put 100 people together, go into a store, and loot the place. And the 911 bastards, we call them the gimmick, they don't stop them. They can take up to $999. How do they know how much they're taking? They're just full of crap.
Did you see the shop owner in California who repriced everything in his little quickie mart to be $951?
Well, that doesn't stop them from swiping it because that's a lie. Everything they're telling you in these enemy broadcasts, especially the Patriots, are liars. They're going to wipe out the world population. We're here. We're mass exterminators, and we're telling you, they're doing it wrong. They wouldn't be bringing all these darkies in here from all over the world if they were going to wipe out the world population. They, no matter how many horrors they suffer, wars, famines, disease, they keep breeding better than mosquitoes all over the world. And they're still coming. And they said the population's gone up. We believe it. To 8.5 billion, not trillion. They look like they're everywhere. And they're just overrunning the place. Who's stopping that? Nobody. It's against the law. Where's the law in this one? So you call 703. That's what I was doing while you were talking on the phone. 703-697-9121. And I don't know how to talk to those people. But did you learn your manners at Waste Point? That's how I talk to them. Sometimes we argue a lot.
All right, so Reb, before I let you go, what's that phone number too? You gave me the number. Where's it go? Who are we calling?
They call it CHOPS, the chairman's office, Pentagon, and it's also called CHOPS National. It's also called NATCOM-CENT, the National Command Center. It's the top of the Pentagon where a complaint is, and you tell them those deadbeats on welfare, Bubba Scout, Reb ain't doing their job, and... Don't shut up about us, because no one's going to stop this. You couldn't get 20 Caucasians. I mean, they get hordes.
But the Caucasians, we're not going in. They're not going to tell these jerks we're not covering nose and mouth. And if you don't want to do that, how are you going to stop? And the silent alarm will go off, and the guineas will show up, because they're told murder Whitey. They let the darkies rape the place and pillage it, and Whitey can't do that. I'm just telling you, it's a slanted thing. It's all against the white race. That's the part of where the decline is. That's where they're wiping out. So we figure you're beat 16-1 by the darkies with this 8.5 billion. That's not reducing populations. That's increasing them. So
all right,
the real message is they're getting rid of.
Getting phone calls piled up behind you, and back over here to the Twitch chat room. Then we got Drink Coaster 22. Nothing racist about this. Hey, I'm not a racist, but it is a free speech network, so I try not to cut people off too terribly much. And Reb's just kind of funny. I don't agree with most of what he says, but he's funny, and I like to listen to him for some strange reason. I don't know. John in Colorado, line 3, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I liked your guest. It was very good. It was kind of interesting, some of those stories you talked about legally. Anyway, talking about voting, you know, it's there, you vote. I think you should. I know there's people even on the RBN saying, I'm not going to vote. And, of course, I didn't ask the question, if they got the voting where it's supposed to be, it's honest and all that, would you go back to vote? I think they would, but voting, and I've been a poll worker when I was in California since I retired for about 10 years before I moved to Colorado. So I've known, I've seen all the ins and outs, and, you know, you're looking at your dealing, run it all through the computer, they take it down to a central point or a precinct, and, you know, I've read about it going back to the way back the Collier brothers wrote their book, The Vote Scam, and knowing that can happen and what's going on, and people, you know, they just don't understand it. They have to get out and just demand it. You have to get out and force. That's the problem. Enough people say that, go change it. But it's possible, you know, at least we've got the right to vote. Whether it's scammed or not, you can get it changed. Enough people demand it. They can change it, get rid of the computer systems, and go back to single ballot voting.
Yep.
That's the only way it's going to do it. Old-fashioned
paper one day. And, you know, I want to say thank you for being a poll worker. That was something I suggested a long time ago. I said, if you're one of these people out there that say that, you know, the elections are corrupt and there's no way to do it, well, what are you doing about it? And the one thing that you can do is be a poll worker, because every county in this country is short poll workers. Hundreds. Here in my county, Center County, Pennsylvania, I we're about 100 poll workers short every election. And with over 3,000 or roughly 3,000 counties in the country, that means that there's, you know, like 300,000 empty polling station jobs. So somebody's going to do those things. Why not be you? Especially if you're one of those people that think the election was stolen, that's corrupt, and you do something about it.
Peter, I agree with it. I enjoyed it, interacting with the public, coming in and voting, and, you know, people, you know, they were very honest. A lot of people, you know, when they say, here's my ID just to prove I am. You didn't have to, but I said, thank you very much, and all that. And the only thing about, I disagree with paying, I think they're underpaid.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to throw a lot of money away. They could pay the poll workers probably 2-3 times what we get for 10 hours a day.
10?
So wow. That's that, but, you know, it's out
ours
there. And
13 here in Pennsylvania, 13 hours. And,
Well, anyway, between 10 and 12, depending on what you're doing, but yeah. And that's all including coming in the night before and getting set up and all that stuff. And then they got the day when you come in and start working, you know, about 10 hours. So that's a lot of work, but, you know.
Here in Pennsylvania, our polls are open for 13 hours. So just the being at the polling station is a 13-hour day, let alone the setting right. it up and the tearing it down and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm a Pennsylvania state constable, and the one thing that I'm required to do is on election days, I have to maintain peace and order at my polling station, and I have five of them in my town. So I spend that day driving between the five stations. I drive to one and spend a half an hour or an hour at that one. Then I drive to one of the other ones and spend half an hour or an hour there. And I do that for 13 hours. And I think I make $160 or something like that for a 13-hour day.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thanks a lot, Peter, for what you did, as I did. You know, it's a lot of work, but, you know, thanks for doing it. And like I said, the more people we could use will help them out. Anyway,
absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks for your call, John. Greatly appreciate it. All right, so let's end the show the way we began it, talking about how we can fix the Republic, starting with your town. So John just brought up another one. There are, you know, in my town, there's about 100 vacant elected jobs. Most of those are polling station jobs, judge of elections and inspector of elections. Can't see that my county is anything unique in any way in that aspect. So if there's 100 of them vacant in my county, there's probably 100 of them vacant in your county. So that's 300,000 election day jobs that could be filled by people who understand the Constitution, understand the voting rights and the voting systems, and keeping an eye to make sure that it stays fair. I suggested switching your party registration even if you don't vote, especially if you don't vote. Because if you don't vote anyway, then your party registration doesn't mean anything to you. So register to the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party or the Green Party or something else. Switch your registration out of the two main political parties, the D's and the R's, the donkeys and the elephants, just to send them a message. Fix your town by electing people to your town, your town council, the county commission, your mayor. Get them all to be people that you trust, that have actually read the Constitution. Teach the Constitution. We have literally millions of people in this country who swear an oath to support and to defend the Constitution almost every day that have never read it. How do you raise your right hand and swear an oath to support and defend something that you've never read? That's crazy. So teach some people. Teach kids. Teach your neighbors. If you're not the teaching type, you don't want to play teacher, find a resource that you can just play. Like my Liberty Lighthouse classroom at liberty-lighthouse.com. Click the classroom button. Got courses there. I don't care how many people. If you get a group of people together and you're going to do the course together, I'll give the course to you for free. Just reach out and let me know. I'll make up a coupon code or something for you so that you can get it free and show it to as many people as you want. I've got about 18 hours worth of courses there available now, and it's going to be growing. So you fix your town, right? You've elected a whole bunch of people to your school board, to your town council. You elected a mayor and a sheriff that all know and understand the Constitution. They've all read it. They all believe in its purpose, and they're ready to go. They're ready to fight for your rights. That's the second key, is the ready to fight. If you don't know your rights, you don't have any rights. But what's the use of having them if you're not willing to fight for them? Somebody's got to stand up and fight for your rights, or they're just going to go away. You know, I mean, silly things like, you know, impounding your car, for example. Let's say that you get pulled over and for whatever reason, the police officer that pulled you over wants to impound your car. Maybe they asked you if you could, if they could search it, and you said no, not without a warrant. And they said, well, we're going to impound it. What rights have they violated at that point? Well, because you said they had to have a warrant, they didn't violate the search and procedure, the illegal search and seizure, but they are impeding your liberty to travel. They are taking your property without due process of law. They are violating constitutional rights. Some of them might know that. Some of them might not even realize that. But if you aren't willing to say, if you impound my car, you're violating my Fifth Amendment right against taking my property without due process, and you're impeding my liberty of travel, you've taken my liberty, my constitutionally guaranteed liberty of travel. So when you take my car and you search it and you find nothing, expect a nice big lawsuit. I really don't think there are that many bad cops. I think cops are a lot like lawyers. They're not taught the Constitution anymore. I should have asked Mr. Morrison when he was on the show, did he take a constitutional class when he became a lawyer? He argued in federal appeals courts. But did he ever actually take a class on the Constitution? Because I bet the answer is no. Most lawyers, they take classes on constitutional law. They take classes about other cases and opinions about the Constitution, but not a course on the Constitution itself. Those are lawyers. And the police are a lot the same way. They, you know, the police academy doesn't teach them about supporting and defending the Constitution, even though that's the first thing in their oath. The police academy teaches them about case law, about what you can and can't get away with based on what other judges and police have done and said in the past. It's, our government has become a lot like that game of telephone when you were a kid. You remember the game of telephone? When, you know, like a whole bunch of kindergartners sit in a circle and the teacher comes and whispers something in one of their ears and they have to pass the message from person to person to person to person until it gets all the way back around to the beginning to see how much the message has changed. That's how our government and most of our society now sees our government and our Constitution. Well, this guy said this, or that guy said that. I heard this. This court case says, this judge said. Well, forget all of that. Read it yourself. First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. No law. So why are we having any debate about free speech issues? No law is pretty clear. Compelling state interest. I don't see that in the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right to peaceably assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. No law means no law. Pretty simple. Read it for yourself, not what some judge says. Misty in Kansas online. Well, welcome to the show, Misty.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm lovely. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You know, you were originally talking about the republic that this country was founded on, a republic, not a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
you go into the Bill of Rights, which is, you brought that up too, which is the supreme law of this land. That's the people's law. The first 10 articles. You have to go back. We've been kind of programmed to say amendments. But if you go back and look at the document, it's a body of law. They're articles. It was the First Amendment with 10 articles. That's our law. Now, we were guaranteed common law courts. Do you agree?
Yes. When was the last time you saw one of those?
When was the last time? Well, let's see. I think they started weaning them out in the late 60s. They started weaning them out to where then, once again, the bar, you were talking about that. I am allowed to represent myself as an American national, period, mm-hmm. in a common law court. Yes, I agree. How'd they disappear? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, just... It's kind of like that 13th Amendment that we were talking about earlier in the show, too. It just disappeared.
Okay, well, if you want to go, that's an amendment. Your Bill of Rights are articles. It's a body of law. So what you were talking about, I doubt anybody understands the Bill of Rights. What is it, I'm asking you, what does the 9th article say in the Bill of Rights? Do you know?
Let me think. The 10th is the... I know the 9th.
Pull it up?
I got to think in my head. Like the 10th is
the ninth
everything
article.
Everything reserved is not... Yeah. I know the 9th and 10th are related. I can't think of the exact of the 9th. I'm sorry.
Oh, really?
I was just looking up the preamble, actually, to the Bill of Rights right now. Oh, the new enumeration of rights. That's what it is. Ninth
enumeration is
not to disparage.
Is the writing down
rights already exist? Right.
The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny nor disparage others retained by the people. Now, if you break those words down and you understand, the Bill of Rights, the law of this republic, is saying the government has no authority, period.
The government only has the authority that we gave it.
Pardon
the
me?
The government only has the authority and only has the power that we gave it, the things that are listed in the Constitution. Everything else is ours.
Yes, I agree. 100%. So I believe firmly people need to understand the Bill of Rights more than that so-called Constitution. The Bill of Rights teaches us our authority. They work for us, not the other way around.
Yeah,
and one other thing I want to say is that I do not feel ashamed for not voting. I do not at all. I'm not going to give my consent to a, quote, government that is ran with dual citizens. They're not natural born. That goes in the Constitution, if you will. I'm not going to give my consent by allowing these people to keep doing what they're doing, sending money, starting wars. And the only thing, I'm not ashamed of that, and no one will ever address it to me as that I should be ashamed of not voting.
But did you hear what he said about your voter registration?
I personally am just dragging my butt on is not unregistering to vote, because I don't give my consent to this fraud.
All right. Have you ever seen the preamble to the Bill of Rights?
I have seen all of it. I know the Bill of Rights.
I didn't even know it existed.
Is the Bill of Rights, period.
The preamble to the Bill of Rights.
Go ahead.
I didn't even know it existed until, a few months ago.
Okay.
We all know the preamble to the Constitution itself. The preamble to the Bill of Rights, I believe it was written by Gouverneur Morris. The conventions of a number of states having at the time of the adoption of the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the benefits ends this institution. And it goes on a little further, but now I hear music and I can't go. It's basically says conventions didn't like some of the stuff. They wanted more restrictions on government. So here we wrote them down. Anyway.
But the 9th article puts everything in checkmate.
Right. 9th and 10th. Time's up. Got to go. Thanks for your call, Misty. If you're listening live on Republic Broadcasting Network, stay tuned for The Edge of Darkness with Jeffrey Bennett. Thank you to T.C. Morrison for joining me this evening. Thank you, Mike, my producer. Couldn't do the show without you. Thank you, and most of all, listeners and callers, you're why we do the show. Until next week, protect your liberties. Once they're gone, there's no getting them back. God bless America.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. cows, too.
Easeoff LLC, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.